Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. And this is episode 32. Woo. Woo woo.
Yes.
Woohoo woohoo. Two rhymes with things. So, Handsomeites, we've got a great one for you this week. We've got the week's newest books that Eric loves all of them.
Yeah, naturally.
Every single book Eric loves this week.
I can't wait to tell you how much I love them.
Just a little foreshadowing. He's a lot of effusive praise.
Mm.
We have volume 7 and 8 of The Sandman. We're close to wrapping it up.
Yep.
And then I am going to deliver a very special monologue in the voice of Alan Moore.
Ooh.
See, Eric made a noise. That means it's going to be really good.
I do normally make noises when things are good.
Yeah. Also when they're bad.
Yeah, I guess.
Not so much when they're mediocre.
Right. That's most of things. I can't just make noises all the time.
No. He has to breathe. Breathing.
I can't breathe noisily, though.
You can, but you don't.
Sometimes I breathe noisily and make noises, and that's private.
Multi-talented.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get all of that, we are going to check in. Eric, what do you got?
Ugh. Me? Ugh.
You. Yeah, it's you. You are Eric.
I got to drive an 8,000 or 9,000 pound forklift the other day.
Cool. Did you kill anyone?
No, thankfully.
Did you crush things?
No. I moved heavy things, which is what forklifts are for.
You carefully moved heavy things from one place to another without incident?
Yes, that's ideally what should happen.
That's true, but it's not nearly as exciting a story as if...
No, it's. I'm not saying it's a good... It's not a good story, but this forklift is the size of my apartment, which is kind of awesome, and I was driving it, and
I saw a picture of you on its wheel.
Yes.
Looking like all masculine.
I can't help it.
I know, it just comes out of you.
Yes.
Literally.
It only takes a little bit of coaxing.
Ooh. Hear that, ladies? So you drove a big forklift.
I worked a shitload. I would like to say that I had something new to bring to you, but I don't. I still haven't been able to play Tiny Barbarian.
No, Tarny Barbarian?
I haven't been able to play that either, mostly because it doesn't exist, but Tiny Barbarian I haven't been able to play.
That is a shame.
Really, I've just been digging down more, and I did go to Emerald City, and I picked up a copy. I don't have it handy. What's the Mesmo Delivery I picked
Mesmo
up?
Mesmo Delivery, yeah. Grandpa.
Yes, my grandpa.
Yes, excellent book, folks, if you haven't checked it out.
So that's what I got today. The Rocketeer. I think, isn't it Mark Waid that's writing it?
Yeah, the new one.
I picked up
there's
Rocketeer multiple, Spirit.
Yeah, he's writing a whole bunch of old pulp hero.
It's I picked up a couple issues of that too, and it's really great. It's got some fun artwork from a guy called Jay Bone.
Yeah, he's actually I wrote about this. He's working on. A series with James Robinson and Jay Bone, and it's called The Saviors. They are it's a kind of a cross between The Thing and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Rad.
Yes, sounds pretty cool to me. I didn't know he was doing the work on the art on that.
So hey, Robbie, what are you checking in with?
So this week I have quite a check-in.
I'm really excited to hear you talk about Anthem. I'd like to discuss it with you. It's one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, Eric has had recently finished Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson, and he had said that it was good, but not as good as Anathem, which is his favorite. I said, well, I'll read it over the week.
You did it in record time, too.
I finished it in like 3 days.
Yeah. How many pages was it? I had the audiobook.
1,000.
1,000 pages. It's pretty hefty.
Yeah, it's quite a long book.
Yeah. He does not make brief statements.
No, he's
my memory.
Wordy.
Yeah.
Quite wordy.
Yes. His characters like to jabber about science.
They do.
And math.
Yes.
All of his characters are hyper nerds. Which is kind of the point, I think.
Yeah.
Is it's I don't know. It's a little bit I don't know, nerd wanky. I don't know.
Yeah, that's probably I enjoyed it, first of all. It was good. I kept reading. I kept wanting to know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that should tell you enough right there.
It definitely propels you through it, you know, it's compelling.
Yes. Again, what you just kind of mentioned is my biggest criticism, I would say, is that it's like a little show-offy. It's a little...
Yeah.
It sometimes seems like the characters are talking and showing about how much they know about the science and stuff, and most of the time it makes sense that they're explaining things because they're quite complicated.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it, they're figuring it out as it goes.
Yes. He crafts it that way on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
In that the characters, a lot of them, if there's characters that do know about it, there are other characters that have no idea. And so it gets explained to them and therefore to us at the same time. Which, you know, it's kind of important when he's exploring ideas that, like, theoretical physics and mathematics that I had kind of heard things about from reading science-y things.
It's very hard sci-fi.
Yes.
It's not the kind of thing that's necessarily for everyone, but...
If you enjoy physics, math, science, heavy, theoretical stuff,
yes.
You like
it. Exactly. If you, like, I don't know, if you like listening to... you know, Richard Feynman or Carl Sagan, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I couldn't think of his name. Or, like, specifically, like, their science writing or their talks on science and not just their, you know, just their inspiring prose.
The hardest part of this book was figuring out what the hell they're saying. Like, the first 200 pages of this was really difficult to read.
I do not doubt that.
Not that it wasn't good. It's just
it's got this alternate reality, and it's got so much esoteric terminology that I remember being really confused about all this stuff because like all these different disciplines, you know, it might be philosophy, but they'll call it whatever.
Something
like, I think
different.
I think like the physics department, like it was called like the Edharian order or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. Like, I
yes,
think,
exactly.
I think, what was the character's name? He becomes an Edharian.
Yes. Erasmus.
Erasmus becomes an Edharian. And it's like everything is obscured by this, this alternate universe, like their terminology, and it does make it more difficult. But you know, the nuts and bolts of the story are very compelling.
You don't know until you figure out all this language and what's actually happening. Which in this, once I figured all this out, I was like, wow, that's really awesome. it took a while to figure it out. Like, what the hell, where it's set and what's happening. Basically, the main character is Erasmus. He is It's like a priesthood, but with science.
Yes, they're like monks that they're sectioned off from society, and they study science and philosophy. And
they're
and
the
math.
Only ones they're allowed to, or only ones that feel inclined to do so. I guess the ones on the outside can. They just
most of them just don't. Yeah, they're a separate religious order all over the world, and anyone can do this, but they're. I don't know. They just have these traditions, and they just do.
Yeah, and when you finally figure out that, like, they have all the, you know, they have the 1 year, and then because they're sectioned off from society, and if you as you graduate, basically, you can choose to move up into a higher, if you want to call it that, section of the monkhood, where like in one section the gate to the outside world opens every year. And then in another section, it opens every 10 years. And then in the third section, it opens every 100 years. And then in the last one, it opens every 1,000 years. And so theoretically, people who are in the 100 years section haven't seen the outside world since the time they moved in, mm-hmm. most likely. And that is... When I finally figured out like how that all is divided and the kind of the mythos behind all of it, after getting through all this big burden of vocabulary, it was very, very interesting. And that alone is a like I could have for the first 400. I don't want to spoil it too much, but you know, just the world in their little cloister alone was very, very interesting. And their interactions with themselves, and you're learning their rules and trying to figure out. It's kind of a mystery the book's playing with you, where you're trying to figure out why the world is like this. And they talk about all the times they've changed and how the outside world has changed, the sacks, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. where the outside world has attacked them. And you learn about the politics of all this and the secular world, as they call it. It's very interesting. My main criticism is, again, a lot of the time it's just a lot of talking about sciencey stuff that I think they could have, some of it could have been a little tighter. I mean, it's not that it's...
You mean tighter from a literary standpoint?
Yes,
and not,
yes. And not,
because oh, this, all the, that's the thing no, about his, all his of science, his, all of his science. I think he takes very few shortcuts.
No, that's the problem I think I have with it. I think he could have gotten the same points across.
Yeah. Like, I don't
but,
think...
By not...
I, exactly.
A lot of it, like, at certain points, I felt like I was being lectured. Like, I was in a science lecture.
Yeah.
And not a good one. A boring one.
I think particularly, like, at the end, where they were describing the ship and the artificial gravity system.
Yeah, I don't... I thought
it really slowed down the narrative there.
I know, you're, like, right in this tight, like, this... it's the fate of the freaking world right now. And these people are racing against infinitesimal odds, purposefully. And I'm not gonna. I won't disclose other things that happen at the end, just for the sake of it.
I think you've been pretty spoiler free so far. So
yeah,
it's good.
It's quite big at the end.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening? But and then it gets slowed down with talks of what the ship looks like, mm-hmm. and how their artificial gravity works, and how all their they've covered a lot of that stuff already. About this alien ship.
Uh-oh. That was a spoiler.
Uh-oh. Well, it's not like it doesn't take very long to... In the grand scope of the book, that's not the biggest mystery. But it slows it down. And I think there are other moments like that where he spends extra time describing things, you know, to try and give them more scientific grounding when I don't think it was really necessary.
Yeah, I think he just really... That is a little wanky in that it just really felt like he wanted to design a ship and talk about it.
Yeah, and I think there are other moments in the book as well that were like that, and I think he could have cut some of it and made
yes.
it a couple parts that lagged and lulled. If he had cut them, it made it even a more gripping, more exciting story when it's... You know, I want to get... You're about to hit the big mm-hmm. payoff to the whole book, and it slows it down, or... You know, there's other moments like that throughout the story where you're going... You know, you want to get an answer, and it's like burdening you with blah, 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 blah. Here, look at this. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think a lot of that is just sort of what Neal Stephenson's readers expect from him.
I guess. I don't know.
And it's just not for everyone. I enjoy all of that, but I do agree that there's a time and place. If it gets in the way of the narrative, I think it could stand to be edited out.
Yeah, and especially, and again, like you were near the end where they're, you know, all these different guys are arguing about strategy and philosophy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Even after reading the whole thing and kind of coming to terms with the vocabulary, it still is, you're trying to parse out, like, what does he mean when he says that? And mm-hmm. you have to, like, it's making you study, which I don't, counterintuitive.
But books aren't supposed to make you think.
Not like that. Not fiction. I don't know. Raise questions, sure, but not about. What does he mean when this word, when he says these five words in sequence mean? Oh, it means that, the thing he explained 600 pages ago. It slows it down again. But, again, it was very good, still. Very interesting. I still have questions at the end,
mm-hmm.
which will bother me a little bit.
We'll have to have a discussion about it later. This has almost been like Nerd Boy Book Club for Anthem.
Yeah, I know. And aside from that, I also want to touch on a game I've owned for a long time and had played for a bit before, and now I picked it up and finally beat it. I just beat it today, just before we started recording for dinner.
Finished it with pizza in your mouth.
I finished before pizza.
Ah.
But XCOM Enemy Unknown, actually, they just released an expansion mm-hmm. that is bundled with it called XCOM Enemy Within. And so if you buy that now, it's like $40. It came out this past month. And it's the same game with a lot of extra missions and stuff like that. But playing through it, it's a great game. Pretty difficult at first. There's quite a steep learning curve about tactics and strategy. But once you get the hang of it, it's still tons of fun. And like you, it's Final Fantasy Tactics. It's very mm-hmm. similar. It's, you know, turn-based. Semi, you know, there's not as heavy role playing in this. It's right. not as heavy as RPG. It's you're not really like your soldiers or you're sending out in a combat to fight these aliens. You're not as like role playing with them. Like you're kind of just controlling a military operation. Like you're dealing with the funding and research and
right.
building new ships and new technology and then controlling your soldiers out in combat. But you don't really, you know, follow them home or anything. But you do get attached to them. And if they die, they're dead for good. You can get around it sometimes by saving, you know, at certain spots and reloading. Unless you play in, like, the hardcore mode, which once it saves for you, then you can't you can't go around it. So every decision you make is good. It's like, it stays in there. But it's Eric, you'd love this game.
I'm gonna have to pick it up. You've recommended it to me like three or four times.
Playing it all the way through this time.
Yeah.
And I'll probably play a second time with the extra stuff in it.
The fact that you not only you've specifically recommended it to me like three times and you have compared it to probably my favorite game of all time. It's probably worth me looking into.
Yeah, if it's Final Fantasy Tactics was you as a modern military might trying to fight off aliens.
Is it modern military? I was thinking it was like StarCraft.
No, it's near future.
Okay.
Like couple years from now.
Okay.
Basically. But at first you start off with Earth technology, and then as you fight aliens and take their stuff, you can research their technology and like adapt it and all kinds of stuff. But that's kind of part of the game. You have to, like, you get a certain amount of money. You have to satisfy the demands of, like, this shadowy world organization. You know, there's multiple attacks happening in three countries at one time. You can only pick one to go to. And then the other two countries are going to be upset, and their panic is going to go up. If their panic gets too high, you lose their support and their money, which you need to buy more stuff. So I've started three different playthroughs, basically,
mm-hmm.
and I'd get progressively further and then realize, oh, shit, my foundation is terrible. I'm never going to be able to get any further because, like, if you don't build up your soldiers correctly, because once they die, you have to, you know, bring in a rookie again.
Right.
And they have to, your characters level up and get better. But if they die, then you're left with someone who has no skills, and then they're shitty in combat as because enemies still get harder.
Yeah.
They're not taking it easy on you, and that's on normal. I can't imagine how hard it is on harder difficulty.
Wow.
But it rewards, you know, experience and multiple playthroughs.
Hmm.
But it's a lot of fun.
Well, that's exciting.
That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got. Only a 30-minute book discussion.
Yeah, it's been a lot of talking. Well, that's it, folks. We'll see you later.
Eric is joking. Because we still have...
We still have all the stuff that this show's about.
Yeah, we still have all the stuff the show's about. Like weekly floppies!
Ba-da-ba-da!
That's nice. I like that.
That's not a good theme song.
It sounds like the dating game.
I've never seen it, so I assume that...
You never watched the dating game?
No.
It was a pretty bad show.
I was going to say, it seems like a really weird thing to watch.
Well, I mean, they don't even make... It's like from the 70s. They don't have it anymore.
Right. With good reason. Sounds kind of creepy.
So, Fleekly Floppies, we're going to start off with DC. Eric, how did you describe DC's creative process?
Oh, what did I say? They make decisions by throwing things at a dartboard. Not even darts. Things. Yes.
So we're going to start off with on that note, Justice League number 25. This is a Forever Evil tie-in.
I'm so glad we got a Forever Evil tie-in.
I know. I know you wanted to read it. Written by Jeff Johns. Doug Mankey is pencils. Chris Alamy, Mark Irwin, Keith Champagne, and Doug Mankey is the inkers. Gabe El-Tabe, Tony Avena, and Rob Reese as colors. Nick Napolitano as letterers. This issue is mostly concerned with Owlman, Earth's 3 Batman, and what he is doing in our world. And what he's doing is, like, trying to get Dick Grayson to be his buddy.
He's trying to get him some dick.
He is.
They call him Richard over and over and over.
Yeah,
So people like me can't make that joke.
Yeah, I don't. If you say it enough times, I don't think it takes the meaning. If you purposely say Richard, it just makes it sound stupider. But it goes in the origin of Owlman. Basically, he was Bruce Wayne's brother. And then had Alfred kill his parents and Bruce Wayne.
Sounds perfectly plausible to me.
Perfectly plausible. And Owlman is, like, trying to take over the city, and then he's trying to talk Dick Grayson into helping him. But it's just stupid.
It is really dumb.
I don't understand. Like, why? Why is he doing all of this? I don't know. And it's revealed that he's dating what's-her-face, Earth 3 Wonder Woman, Superwoman, as she's called.
Right.
So I just can't, the alternate names.
It's like, yeah, a bunch of completely weird and arbitrary changes that it's, you know.
Yeah, it's Ultraman and Superwoman. Why is she Superwoman? So, whatever. But I don't, why would Dick Grayson ever agree to this? This guy is part of the group that fucking kidnapped him, beat him to a pulp, and then revealed his identity to the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. There's nothing this guy could say to him that I think would convince him to help. I need your help to stop the rest of this syndicate. You mean the one that you're a part of?
it's.
After right. He tells him, I murdered my family as a child. If someone tells me that I murdered my family, that they murdered their family as a child, and then now they're a superhero because of it, that sets off some alarms in my mind, I would think. And I'm sure that this is going to just come into some reveal where Nightwing doesn't trust him at all and ends up, you know, betraying him or something. But I can see it coming. What is the point of all this? There's an entire... Where is the Justice League in this Justice League? This is the Justice League comic book, correct, Eric? That's what's on the cover, right?
Wait, let me check. Yes.
It says Justice League. I have not seen a member of the Justice League in this book. There's no one.
I think I can get a pass on that, though.
Why?
They're involved. They're implicit in here. This is a storyline where they're all dead or something.
They're not dead.
I think there's worse things to criticize other than the Justice League not being in a Justice League comic.
I know, it just bothers me.
I get where you're coming from, but there's a lot of dumb things about this.
Okay, well, what's your top dumb thing?
I mean, everything you've just said is spot on. The thing that this made me think of is, how is it that DC, in like their television cartoons, get mm-hmm. everything right? Think about how great the Batman cartoon was in like Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And like the new Batman cartoons, just like the Brave and the Bold, all of these were really solid. And all of their comics are pretty poor. Or not all of them, but many of them are. Many of their mainstream characters. But the same ones these cartoons are about are pretty poor.
Different offices handle them.
I mean, that's certainly true, but why are they steering the ship in that direction? It's really weird to me.
You mean like weird, convoluted, gritty retellings of a different alternate version Batman?
Yeah, that's just so strange to me. It makes no sense. But I mean, you've pretty much nailed it shut. That's exactly it. Why do we need that?
I don't know.
It doesn't make a bit of sense to me. The cartoons are clearly marketed at a younger audience, and I assume that these comics are marketed at an older audience.
Yes. They're like what we criticize DC every week for. Trying like gritty over the top.
Well, this is the thing. Don't the same older audience, don't they watch these same cartoons and love them?
Yes.
I don't know any comic book nerds. It's like, man, the original Batman, the animated series, that's fucking garbage. I hate it.
No, pretty much it's universally enjoyed.
Yes, absolutely.
Everyone likes it.
Absolutely. I don't understand. I just don't understand this direct. It just doesn't make sense.
If all of us, both of us belly aching about this doesn't make it clear, we are, but I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, I'm a don't buy.
I keep lobbing softballs to DC, and they keep swinging and missing. Mm-hmm. This is like this is Justice League. This is the flagship book. And think about the last issue of Avengers we talked about. And then this. We didn't talk about the art at all, but it looks like Jim Lee drew it. Or tried to draw it.
In some points, yes, and in some points, no. I feel like I enjoy it more than Jim Lee, considerably more.
Okay. Well, I like the,
it's a more photorealistic style and less of a Jim Lee style in my mind.
That's true, it is.
And I think I enjoy that about it, even though I don't typically just enjoy flat-out photorealism in comics. I just think it's executed well.
Yeah, it's...
The cover's pretty Jim Lee.
Yeah. And there are, it's considering how many colors, how many inkers worked on this.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's the reason that it varies. I don't know.
Mm.
The fight scenes seem to be more Jim Lee-y than, I don't know. It seems to be that it looked more like him than not. But.
I want to find one. I don't know, I'm not really getting a strong Jim Lee vibe on it.
Okay.
I don't particularly, disagree. I'm sure this artist is influenced it at some level. It just doesn't scream Jim Lee to me in the way that so many of these other books do.
It's not as Jim Lee.
Mm-hmm.
How do you? What word can we use? I don't know. Leish. It's not Leish. Leish.
That's good. That's better than what I was going to come up with.
Regardless, nothing can. I don't know what kind of art could save this story. It's just convoluted and. Point. I don't understand the reasoning for making it this complicated.
Yeah, it's a story for adults with a plot that could be poked apart by a child.
Yes.
When I think what these characters need is a story that's appropriate for children that everyone can enjoy. That's
strong, just, clear storytelling.
Exactly.
How about that? It's not that complicated. We need to get Dan DiDio down here and set him in front of a television with a Batman animated series. Just make him watch that.
Maybe he's never seen it. You don't know.
If he hasn't watched that, I would.
It wouldn't make a lot of sense.
But the fact, it seems like it'd be impossible for him not to have seen it, but the thought crossed my mind. Maybe he hasn't. Ugh, whatever. We're going to not buy. Don't buy that. Don't buy this book. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's extra crappy.
Next DC book, a new number one.
Goodness.
Uh-oh. Justice League 3000. Much hyped, much controversial kind of production of this book. It's been pushed back multiple times. Artists been taken off, changed, replaced. This is plot and dialogue by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, respectively, who do Larfleeze. Mm. They write Larfleeze, our much-beloved Larfleeze, with Howard Porter on art, interior, and cover. Sal Cipriano is doing the letters. Hi-Fi colorists, interior, and cover. And there's other people with other titles, which I don't know what they mean, so I'm going to ignore them.
I think Master of Time and Space, you can ignore that, whatever the shit that means.
Exactly. This is, so it's Justice League 3000. It's in the year 3000. There's these two twins. They're called the Wonder Twins. Ha ha. Ha. One looks like Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. The chick doesn't look like, I guess, any character in particular.
Quicksilver with a faux hawk.
Yeah, she just looks, I mean, they are twins. But they have basically, them and their company have cloned Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, and The Flash, and then brought them back in this time. But they lack kind of all their context, which is kind of, I guess, the point. You know, Batman didn't lose his parents. Superman was never raised by the Kents. Green Lantern has a cloak instead of a ring. Wonder Woman is just kind of like a crazy, bloodthirsty warrior. She just wants to murder everything.
Naturally, it's very important.
And the Flash has lost his aura that protects him from the speed. He has to wear a force field instead. And what I just said is kind of the story as well as the...
Right.
That's what's propelling his action, the fact that these characters are, like, different. Superman and Batman are trying to... Like, Superman's literally trying to murder Batman at least twice in this story.
He talks about it the whole book. Any scene he's in, he's like, man, fucking hate that Batman guy. I'm gonna eat his brains.
Yeah, and Batman's, I guess, the most well-adjusted of all these guys. But still, not really that great. I do like the fact that when they cut to him and they're like their little like hidden camera thing, he has a woman leaving,
right?
leaving behind him. So he hasn't lost all of his character, I guess. Still a playboy, but they're facing like the only enemy in this book is like a hive mind parasite thing. I'm not sure exactly how it works. They just beat and murder like hordes of people that are possessed. But there's some nebulous foe called the Five that apparently is destroying everything, and that's why these guys were brought back. And this not necessarily is a bad idea. Like, it could be interesting. The execution is kind of meh.
Yeah.
What are your
thoughts? I think meh describes it so very completely. There's some things that don't add up. Like, if this is supposed to be like some weird, you know, nature versus nurture exploration into the minds of these characters, then why do they have memories of who they were back then? Because Batman at one point says, you know, you really were sunnier back in the day, and they keep talking about how they used to be and this and that.
Yeah, they mention a little bit about they have implants of their memories, but they're, like, imperfect.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't quite add up right. I mean, I don't know.
I think they have to do that just to shortcut it a little bit. Because
I guess.
Otherwise, they just are raising these people from nothing.
Yeah, and they would... They could... But I think that is... I don't know. That is
That'd be kind more of the, interesting.
That is kind of the point. That they're completely different people.
I think that some of it's supposed to be, like, over the top and...
Mm-hmm.
And on purpose...
Yeah.
But it doesn't succeed. It just makes it, you know, I don't like any of these characters necessarily. Yeah. I mean, they're unlikable dicks for the most part.
Yeah.
Flash and Green Lantern are all right, but you don't get any, the questions about why he has a cloak instead of a ring and which Flash is this? Is this Wally West? Is it? I mean, they don't tell you, and it's just it's seeming like it ends with what is propelling this story forward is Batman and Superman like being at each other's throats. I don't care about that. Is that supposed to sell us? Is that the thing that's supposed to sell us on buying more of this? Like, see them, like, eventually become friends and good teammates? Because that is what they were doing in the new Justice League book 2 years ago. And then what they're doing in their team-up book. How much of it are they... How much Batman-Superman rivalry do we need? Can they just be friends for once?
It's just weird. Weird macho posturing. That's what we need. That's what we need in a comic book. That's what I'm dying to see.
It's tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what you said, macho posturing.
Yep.
That is awful. It's throughout most of these DC main books. Like, look how manly I am. Look how much of a badass I am and how much of a dick I can be. It just doesn't do it for me. What do you think about the art on it?
It's not terrible, but
yeah,
I feel like the less said about it, the better. Yeah. It doesn't give me the warm fuzzies. I to some degree like the redesigns of the costumes.
Yeah, the redesigns aren't bad. It's just
I think that what was it, the 80s and 90s, a lot of art had grids in it, like square grids.
Mm-hmm.
And it really dates the artwork. I think that hexagon pattern
about looking at Superman's costume. And
yeah, I mean, it's in this. It's in stuff like Mass Effect. It's in Crisis. I mean, it's everywhere, honestly.
It's like trying to make it a more military-looking...
Well, I don't know if it's military, it's industrial, but it's big in any kind of sci-fi now. And I think that 10 or 20 years from now, stuff from this time period is going to look really super dated whenever that shows up. It's going to be like that 80s, 90s, early 90s grid in those illustrations.
I didn't notice. It's on everyone but Green Lantern's costume on that last page. It's in Flash. I did not even see it. I saw it in Superman's. I didn't see it. And now that I see it, I don't think I'll ever unsee it.
Yeah, it'll really jump out at you every time you see it. It's all over the place. It is really going to jump out at you because it is everywhere.
But I want to like this just because these same guys write Larfleeze and they wrote used, but I can't. Like, I can't like this. It's not that
it's good. Just well, it's just bad at the foundational premise level.
Well, there's a lot of reports that, you know, DC they changed the artist, mm-hmm, because originally it wasn't gritty enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, who knows what has happened throughout its life, but the Justice League 3000, number one, do not buy. Do not buy.
Yeah,
please.
With heavy heart, do not buy.
Yeah. We are going to jump over to our indie book of the week, and that is Dead Body Road number 1, written by Justin Jordan, Matteo Scalera doing pencils and inks, Marino Denisio is the colorist, and Pat Brousseau doing the letters. This is a story, boiled down, is fairly simple. Heist gone wrong, and a guy trying to get revenge for his dead wife. And I like that it gets to the point quickly.
Getting to the point is good. But it's hard for me to articulate what I don't like about this.
Really?
You're fairly positive on it?
Fairly positive.
I don't really enjoy it. It's like watching the most generic action movie possible on fast forward. I don't know. Just something about it. Like, it's just completely flavorless. I wish I could explain, like, I don't know, something about the way that it just moves from panel to panel.
There are moments in it where I was confused about who were, you know, like, I had to go back and which character is that, which is happening? Because there's, like, you're going back and there's so many guys on this heist mission, you're trying to figure out, there's a scene where there's multiple guys all shooting and driving cars and firing, and you're trying to figure out who's and who and what's happening, and at the same time, there's other things happening off screen somewhere else, and you're trying to make, there's a lot of characters. And it's easy to lose track of who's who and what's what.
That's because they're all introduced in the space of, like, a couple of pages.
It's true.
You know, and that we're not really shown anything unique about them other than the way they look.
Yeah.
You know, well, the only character that we know, the character we know the most about is, like, this cop that shows up and he's like, hey, I'm looking into this. Bye. That's, I mean, we know his occupation. We know nothing about anyone else. I don't know. It's really just a bizarre book. There's just no depth given to anything. It's just, I mean, like you said, it really gets to the point, but it also has not created a single compelling character.
No, I don't. I don't, this is definitely not a character. I mean, I can be a sucker for revenge stories.
Mm-hmm.
Even not great ones. I mean, there's a lot of revenge stories out there, but I mean, most of them aren't. They're on par with this, where it's, you know, it's plot driven story where it's just, you know, this guy's wife dies and he wants revenge. That's it. And I think the main thing I like about it is I like the art. I like Mateo Scalera.
The art is unquestionably gorgeous.
And I like that it's moving fast. And I guess it's like when you say it's like a, it feels like to me like it's when you go see, I don't know, like The Expendables or something like that, on par with that, where mm-hmm. you go, I know this is not going to be a great plot. It's going to be like guys with guns and shooting shit and like being.
Yeah, you know. But that's the Expendables works because you already like Arnold's up there or Stallone. You know Arnold. You know Stallone.
Well, you know, this guy's the same archetype. He's the, you know.
I understand that, but I don't. Why do I care? It's just, it's propelled, I don't know, it's just, it feels like really clumsy, just stupid. I don't know, it doesn't.
I don't disagree with you. I don't say, it's definitely not a smart book.
If it actually showed me something in the first couple of pages that had me hooked, other than like, this guy's girlfriend is dead, I might actually enjoy this, you know, if it showed me like a Die Hard moment where like these guys like blow up a whole building or kidnap all these people and then this guy's got to do something, like that's, if this was Die Hard the comic, like that would be kind of awesome. But it's so generic, it's like they're not trying, and it blows my mind. It's the art is really nice, and it's like great visuals for writing that's on par with The Room in my mind.
No, it's not as that bad.
It's how it feels to me. Like I feel like I feel like the dialogue is not quite that poorly written, because I think that in some ways it's kind of it's not badly written, but something about it just doesn't sit with me. I can't I can't really fully articulate why I don't like it.
We don't have to go on and on about this.
No, we don't. I mean, it's just pretty clear where we stand. I think
I'm not in love with this book by any means. I'm just saying I enjoyed it more than I didn't.
Well,
I'm a 3 out of 5. Hmm. That'd be where I lay. Folks, if you think a 3 out of 5 is worthy of purchasing, the art is really nice. Mm-hmm. That alone is probably most of what I enjoy, plus I'm a sucker for revenge stories. That is pretty much what's selling this book.
I feel like issue 2, I could be a buy on, because at that point, it's just going to be shooting and driving, you know, driving like chase scenes and awesome stuff happening. Right now, it's like the thinnest story possible. Bare minimum story. Zero cool ideas, nothing, and I just think it's a bad comic, and I would just say just don't buy it.
Well, there you go, folks. Split decision. That's a buy and a do not buy, depending on how you want to parse things. So, folks, we are going to go over to Marvel, and our first Marvel book is Captain America number 14, written by Rick Remender, pencils by Carlos Pacheco, inks by Mariano Taibo, and Dean White on colors. This book sees us watch. We get to see Cap and Nuke fight it out while espousing vague political sentiments at each other.
Isn't this like a weird blast from the past, too? Because isn't this this whole story started before before Infinity started? It's like been on pause since then, hasn't it?
It's I mean, it's been this same thing where it's just, you know, them fighting through various settings. Like, it's, you know, slowly. The last issue, you got some more iron, more insight into Iron Nail, you know, about his background.
Yes.
This issue brings it back to, you know, Captain America fighting.
Well, I'm just saying that number 12 was the last one we did.
Yeah, 13 had more Iron Nail stuff in it.
Right. But what was the publication date with number 12?
I want to say months ago.
Yeah, I was going to say it seems like it is longer ago than that.
It's pretty consistently about once.
It feels like it's probably like ago,
I mean,
that,
4 to 5 weeks.
That makes a lot of sense.
But I that was what the thing I was going to bring up in this is that it's very decompressed kind of story, where this fight scene is literally almost the entire comic book.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot else.
You know, where
there's gotcha journalism.
Gotcha. I mean, I guess there's some kind of interesting rhetoric that's happening. You know, it can be, at least in context with Captain America. But it's just going on too long. I want more Iron Nail, less Captain America fighting Nuke. Even though that shot with Nuke, like, his face coming through the flames is really awesome. Going on too long. There's no reason this fight needs to go on for this long. But at least we know that Nuke's done. There's no more Nuke in this story.
Maybe never again. It would be really great.
Never, no more Nuke. You're tired of Nuke. I'm kind of tired of Nuke myself.
It's just, I don't know.
The problem I think I have with it is that this Nuke character is just so one dimensional.
And then, yeah.
And you have this Iron Nail figure in the background who we know, like, very little about. He's kind of still mysterious. He's trying to take down S.H.I.E.L.D., but he seems to be very, you know, three-dimensional, have his own kind of motivation and stuff like that, and you don't get to see a lot of it. And even with what I've read 13, still, I mean, I don't understand why it's not focusing more on him and we're getting, you know, to that. I don't think Nuke should be sticking around for 3 issues. Mm-hmm. He's not good enough villain for that.
I don't really have terribly strong feelings about this one way or the other.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. I think there's much better Captain America stories. This is just, it just feels like a really good second string story at this point. And I agree with you on the Iron Nail. I hate to just go straight along with what you're saying, but I think we're really on the same page with this one.
Yeah, I mean, the art is nice enough.
The art is very good. It's nothing that's blowing me away, but it's certainly strong.
Yeah, I mean, that there's, I've already mentioned that one shot with Nuke's face in the flames and.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what page is that? Page 15. I really, really, really like that shot. But it's just, and he's been fighting Cap for, it seems like, forever. I don't keep going, move. That's my main complaint about the first arc of this, when Cap was lost in Dimension Z. There's a couple issues where it's just, you know, could have sped it up. Moved it along.
Unless you're a huge Nuke fan, there's no real reason to buy this book.
Yeah,
heavily invested in this arc.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've been like, I want to know more about this Iron Nail, but you know, then you get a book that's entire fight scene with Nuke. They could have ended that halfway through and then moved, started on to the next thing. But still, I bought it because I've been reading Cap from them. Since the relaunch, since Marvel Now, and it's kind of the point where I'd have to see like 4 bad issues in a row to stop reading it, which I haven't. But this is not. So, unless it's your monthly pool, which then it doesn't matter, but do not buy.
Yeah, no real reason. Just don't do it.
Our last book of the week is Inhumanity Awakening, number 1. Written by Matt Kent, art by Paul Davidson, colors Jean-Francois Bailot. I can't say French words. Letters by Joe Caramon. I really want to like this book. And I think there's really interesting things in it. Mm. There's a lot of little things in it that bother me.
It's a lot of very ambitious, sort of experimental storytelling that just falls really flat.
Yeah. That's kind of where, I mean, like, I really enjoy, like, the whole, almost most of the story told through, like, the lens of social media, Instagram and Twitter.
I think this person is trying pretty hard to tell this light little story. I think they're trying to do, you know, how Alan Moore would sort of interweave parts in The Watchmen.
Right.
And, you know, there would be like a couple of different narratives going at once, because he was saying that that's something that no other medium can really do but right. comics. And I think this is trying to do that. What with the Twitter feed at the top of the page running through the whole book, and it doesn't quite work.
No, that's I really like all the characters in this, because you get to see guys like, you know, the young students from the X-Men, the Young Avengers, Avengers Academy, you know, from the Future Foundation. You get a lot of just, they're the main players in this book, and that's kind of interesting, because outside of their you know, those books that they, you know, their title books, you never see them. But again, it is, I don't know what it, I can't, it's hard for me to pinpoint. It's just the social media doesn't sell it, the kind of the Twitter thing and the Instagram thing. It just seems almost too far-fetched at this point. Like, mm-hmm. some of the intrusiveness, not even some of, I mean, I think less of it would have been better, honestly. Like, you could have sold it better using less of it.
Yeah.
Less of its presence.
I actually, a book that this makes me think of is The Animal Man.
Yeah.
You remember when they did fake Twitter?
Yeah.
And that it wasn't called Twitter.
And yeah, but this, like, this is on every page of this book.
Yeah.
In Animal Man, it was here
and
there.
That's exactly what I was saying, is Animal Man has the same idea. They did it before this book, and I think they did it much better.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't really like, I mean,
you
it's
don't
okay.
like the art?
But really, Quentin Quire looks like a drag queen.
Who does?
Pink hair boy.
Okay.
Quentin Quire. He's not a big macho guy, but he doesn't look like a drag queen. He looks like a young rebellious boy with, you know, a pink mohawk, whatever. He does not look like he has eyeliner on. Some of it's not bad, and then some of it really bothers me.
I just think that it's just trying to have a younger look. Normally when they use an artist like this that has, I want to say this artist got a lot of manga influence, that normally when they put that in there, they're trying to market it to a younger audience. And
well, this is, yeah, I mean, this, it is all the younger.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, that's all consistent is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I want to say that that character being drawn that way, that was an intentional decision. You know, that's not an accident.
It just doesn't jive with my expectations of the character. A lot of the story is just kind of rote. They're just telling the kind of a mutant. Again, you've seen this story before with kids getting their mutant powers, and now suddenly it's again with the inhumanity thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish there was more plot than just this girl is, you know, doesn't like that she has feathers now. And then you don't get to that until the very end, than that.
Why is Vain Boy wearing this weird headgear at the end?
I don't know.
Is he a wrestler? What's going on?
I think so. I don't know.
I will say he looks like a garbage pail kid. He looks so nasty.
Yeah, he does. He looks really gross. He has, like, a knee pad on, too. So I assume he was a wrestler. But I don't know. It's
the first thing I thought was, like, he's wearing, like, protective headgear.
He's special.
Yes, exactly. That he's mentally handicapped. I was going to use a not-so-nice word, and I'm glad you ran out there with special and stopped me.
Regardless, I really want to like this book because I like Matt Kent a lot and I love Inhumans, but I just don't like this book very much. So, do not buy.
Yeah, absolutely can't recommend it at all.
So, that's it for Week of Floppies. That was not a very good week.
Yep, that was shit week.
I guess they all can't be winners.
You certainly didn't win this week. Seems like there were some good books that did come out.
Were there?
Yeah.
I could have gotten, the new WWE book, comic book came out this week.
You really think that's what I wanted to talk about?
No.
Didn't Superior Foes of Spider-Man come out?
Superior Foes of Spider-Man 6 did come out. I did read it, and it's very good.
I mean, I really wanted to know what happened to the head of Silvermane on a lawnmower.
It was the RC car, I think.
Either one is hilarious. It doesn't matter. I just like saying lawnmower.
There are some little interesting things that happen in it. It's still very, very good. But we already, every time we've read it, it's been very, very good. And we say, yeah, go buy it. It's just the same every week.
Well, now you've said it.
It was very, very good. Go buy it.
You think we're are we actually going to say, don't buy comics? You have to say something.
Yes, yeah, so definitely go buy Spirit of Foes of Spider-Man number 6. Keep buying it. It's an excellent, excellent story. It's getting better, I think, actually.
That's exciting.
I also like to mention that Regular Show Skips number 2 also came out this week. I enjoyed it more than number 1.
That's some Mad is really kicking ass with it, huh?
Yeah. It's kind of hitting Skips in kind of Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, and it's, you know, that's the kind of the story.
Excellent. And
it's really fun. Go buy those two books. We basically said don't buy anything this week. So go buy those two comic books. They are both very good.
This has been an unprecedented week where we're just like, this is terrible.
Yeah. So both Regular Show Skips and Superior Foes of Spider-Man, I would wholeheartedly recommend them. So, Nerd Boy Book Club this week, we are reading Sandman Volume 7, 8, continuing on. 7, Brief Lives. We're going to start with there. Eric, what are your sentiments about Brief Lives?
Is it
place in your rankings?
It's pretty high up there. When I think of the books that are like whole narratives, it's really tough for me to rank Brief Lives. It's one of the ones that is very strong but kind of gets forgotten. Because my favorites, we've done a lot of my favorites, but my absolute favorite is the next one that we're reading for next week, which is The Kindly Ones.
Right.
But none of it would matter without what happens in this book, really. And a lot of the events that happened before. This one, when I read it as a younger comic reader, it really stuck out to me as probably the strongest story, because I was reading them in order, the strongest story since Season of Mist. And I think that I enjoy it more than I enjoyed Season of Mist over this reread, anyway. This book still had a lot of the emotional impact, and it's still as strong as ever. And it's a very different sort of side of a lot of these characters. You know, we get a lot of delirium in this book, and we see almost a more comical side of Morpheus.
Yeah.
You know, there's the foil of him and his sister. It's a very interesting book, and I think it works really well. When it needs to be sad, it's sad, and when it needs to be funny, it's funny. I don't know. It's a pretty damned interesting book, and it's really stands amongst the best. It's pretty great.
Yeah, this is my favorite so far.
Oh yeah?
Yes, definitely. You finally see more of Morpheus than just kind of his same kind of, you know, he speaks as little words as possible, and, you know, he's kind of tries to play things close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
In this, you get to see him actually, you know, he goes on a road trip with his sister.
Right. And as stupid as that sounds, it's actually executed very well.
Yes, and you get background on him, get background on his sister, and finally, they're going after, they're trying to find their brother.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's the reason I like this the most, is that it's, yes, they're endless, they're these beings that live forever and, you know, control inner workings of the universe, but they're doing something that any one of us would do.
Yeah, it's a very it's a very human story,
where
in that way.
Yeah, where it's their brother, skipped out on them because he had enough of whatever, he wanted to get away, and now they're going to look for him. He's been gone for a long time. They miss him, or at least Delirium misses him and Despair misses him. Morpheus is kind of has ulterior motives, but that's another interesting factor, and. You get to, it's connects them in a way to like a humanity that you don't see a lot of elsewhere so far, at least in the Sandman. Usually you're reminded of how otherworldly they are, how they're not like us. And this makes it seem, they're not that different than us, other than the fact that they're, infinite beings of unfathomable power. But that's also used for comedic effect sometimes. And I think this is probably the funniest of the books so far.
It's easily the funniest. Yeah. Many of them are not very funny.
No, that's...
Depending on how you feel about Neil Gaiman, maybe they're unintentionally funny. I kind of think that some of the really overdone writing in Volume 1 is kind of darkly funny, but there's a lot of very effective humor.
And like you said, Morpheus becomes like the straight man to Delirium. She's kind of the wacky one.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty effective.
Yeah, it works very well.
And there are some parts where Morpheus is absolutely hilarious. Just completely, he wouldn't intend it as such, but it's very, the comedic timing is just, it's just very well done.
Yeah, I've liked this more than anything up until this point.
So I don't know, that's a pretty simple discussion.
Yeah, I'd say the art is a little bit more consistent as well. It's finally kind of hitting a point where it's...
Yeah, it's all done. The whole book is done by Jill Thompson.
Yes, who's good.
Yeah, she's very talented, and this was sort of her big start in comics. I think that she might have done work before this. I actually don't know all the ins and outs of her career. But I know that she sort of got this job. She did a con sketch or something of Death, and it was like this, like a nude picture of Death. And a fan brought it to Neil Gaiman because he wanted him to sign it as well. And he really liked it, and he went over and talked to her. And that led to basically this book being done together. They collaborated on it, and... She invented all kinds of things in the process of their collaboration, including the little endless, which it was not in this book. It was in one of the last books. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was in one of the stories with Daniel where he wanders into the dreaming. I can't remember, but same artist as that. I actually think that the inking kind of ruins this. I think it should be a lot bolder. I feel like if it was just her pencils, this would look a lot stronger. I feel like it's a little too wispy to the detriment of the way the artwork looks.
Seems like that's a reoccurring theme.
Yeah, it is. The art could be a lot better than it is, and something kind of Fs it up. I really don't understand... Jill's very good, and I'm not sure what was holding this back.
But still, just having one artist...
Oh, yeah, it certainly helps.
Makes it that much better, just because it has a consistent look.
Mm-hmm.
Issue in one... It's a one story, you don't have, six different artists telling it.
Yeah.
It helps a lot.
It's not like the first two books. where it just jumps around and changes every issue. You remember how we talked about how A Game of You was the feminine story? I think this is the feminine story as well, you know. Particularly, you know, you talk about the parts about where it focuses on Tiffany and Ishtar, and and really throughout a lot of this book, the main character is sort of, arguably, Delirium.
Yeah.
I
mean, she's certainly, I mean, it's her and Morpheus, and she's getting, she gets a lot of the, I mean, she's the driving force of the plot. A lot of it is, the crux is on her. And he's just kind of coming along. I mean, it does kind of shift to him at the end.
Yeah.
But you certainly get a lot of insight into her character that you had really not seen at all up to this point. She's just kind of
She wasn't much of anything, really.
No, she's just kind of this
I think mystery. This is the story that sort of launched her whole fandom. She's a very well-liked character. Probably only just behind Death in popularity.
Yeah, they are. Well, it's hard for me to disagree. They're probably. I mean, Morpheus is cool, but he's not very likable.
No. Well, I mean, I
understand that's kind of the point, is that he's coming to terms with himself and how he wasn't always a very nice person up until a certain point. And this story is part of the thing that makes him actually like him.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, he's just kind of like a compelling figure just because of his role, and he's interesting, but not necessarily likable.
Yeah,
this makes you like him a little. You go, wow, yeah, he's not you know, just this, you know, curmudgeon who's always doing his job.
Mm-hmm.
It adds another dimension to it.
It is very interesting to read over this because I never really quite realized just how, even when he's funny, he's terrifying.
Yeah.
And even now that he's softened up, he's terrifying.
Yeah, he's still not like a huggable person. He's not like someone, you know, Death you think would be the scariest one.
Yeah,
and she's easily the most likable and nicest.
Yeah, she's, I don't know, almost the most benign.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll kill you, but Morpheus will throw you down in the pit of hell.
Yeah,
and even
Delirium in this issue, she makes
that guy insane forever.
Yes, yeah, he has insects crawling all over himself in his mind until he dies, which reminds you of how powerful these beings are. They wield immense power.
This is this book. I don't know. Looking back through it, it's a lot of foreshadowing, a lot of setting up the climax of the next two books,
right.
And even considering that, it still manages to be very compelling and just a very strong story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'm interested in a lot of your perspectives. What did you think of Destruction? Even though you really can't, he's not really Destruction. He's the Prodigal.
Right, I kind of like him. I mean, it's after getting, you know, Morpheus, and he's, you know, Morpheus is this very by the book, very responsible guy. He does his job.
That's yeah,
important to him. Getting this other kind of entirely different viewpoint, where this guy, you know, had a role in the universe, quote unquote. And he just goes, they don't need me. Why am I doing this? I could be, you know, painting trees and talking to my dog.
There's a lot of interesting things around what you just said. And that the story of the Sandman, the overall story, is a tragedy. And right. Morpheus is, you've basically just laid out that's his character flaw.
Right.
And his brother saying, remember how I left, is really his, he apparently sees what is about to happen, and he says, he's basically telling Morpheus the way to save himself.
Right.
And I think that's what's so interesting about him, is that he can't.
Yeah.
That's his flaw, is that he's got to do everything, he's got to work and do everything correctly. And
dutiful.
Yeah, exactly. Duty.
Obligation.
Obligation, yeah. And that's, I don't know, that's where the foreshadowing comes in. I think that, I really like the way that Neil Gaiman describes destruction, and that he's someone that has spent his entire existence obviously destroying things and has decided to quit and create things.
Yeah.
And he's really shitty at it.
He doesn't care.
Yeah. And I think that's really beautiful. Yeah, I don't know. I really like that about his character, and he's one of my favorite characters in the whole series.
Well, his choice reflects a point of contention and clash. At our age or younger or older or any, I mean, most anyone really, it doesn't happen at any time in your life, but you have you always feel pulled in different directions about, working and doing a job that you might not necessarily enjoy, and versus doing something that you love that won't necessarily be considered good or, practical or worthwhile. And you see him live this very simple life out by himself with his dog, just happens to be a talking dog, where he just, he paints things for fun. He doesn't care if they're bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he sculpts things that aren't good.
Yep.
And then he doesn't care. He just keeps doing it. And, lives kind of this Spartan lifestyle in crates. And he's come to terms with the fact that his old job wasn't needed. No one needed him. The world is functioning just fine without him doing it. And he seems seemingly happy. He's come to peace with that. And that makes him kind of it's an admirable thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That he's happy, even though, and despite the fact that he used to be destruction. I've always ever since they mentioned that one of their brothers was missing, and very early on in the story, that had intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason I like this one more than anything so far. Is just, you get to see him and get some insight into his character.
Yeah, it's a pretty satisfying answer to that when you look at it that way.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the ending at all?
Yeah, I think it's important.
Nah.
No.
Let's just not talk about this book.
Not at all. We only talked about it for half an hour so far.
We'll just say bye.
I don't think we have to tell anyone to buy The Sandman. It's one of the best-selling comic series of all time.
I know.
Okay.
That was what is called a joke.
Oh! Ah, ha, ha. I laugh at your joke.
You can. That's what's encouraged.
No, I think that's... I think that is... When Morpheus had told his son that, we will never see each other again. And then, at a certain point when he's with Delirium and trying to find his brother, and he goes, I know someone who can tell us the way. And that, I think, is the most emblematic thing about how Morpheus has changed since his imprisonment. That he's willing to do something he said he never would.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's funny because he changes course on something and goes to see his son and makes a bargain with him, basically so that he can find his brother. But at the same time, it's reinforcing the fact that he's going to these lengths to also do something that's totally in his character, which is not do something halfway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he decides, you know, once he decides that he and Delimit are going to find his brother, that is a reinforcement of his character, and all the ways that him going back on his word to his son isn't. And it kind of exemplifies that he's trying to escape this cycle of duty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just reinforcing.
Yeah, I mean,
and you see some emotion from him. Morpheus is this kind of stoic character most of the time, and him, you know, going to see his son, and you know, finally setting him free, so to speak. Like it's funny how they kind of contrast it with his moodiness at the beginning of this arc. You know, he makes it rain.
It's a pretty funny bit, isn't it?
Yeah, he makes it rain for, you know, weeks on end, and everyone's like, oh, how long is this one going to last? And then finally at the end, you know, he's something that is obviously deeply saddening to him. And he doesn't make it rain. He just is, he says, I'll work tomorrow, but today I'm going to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know if it's him changing at all.
I don't know if that's changing, and it's interesting because I've never really thought about that. Because it's a lot deeper, I think, of a pain.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
With him having to end, really having to confront what happened to his son, and having to end his son's life.
Right.
You know. Versus a girlfriend that he had for a couple of months that never really loved him, that left him.
Yeah. Well,
I've never really thought about the contrast of those two things.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily showing that it changed him, even though it did change him in a certain way.
These events necessarily.
But I think that is just a contrast, the difference between the two pains, whatever you want to, however mm-hmm. you want to say it. That the first one was superficial, and the second one is probably, you know, deeply scarring, and would take actual, you know, introspection and work to get through. But it's refreshing to see him show that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And not be that superficial kind of sorrow.
Yeah,
you know,
it's almost important that it was included, that both were included in the narrative.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I think it also shows that he's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the other thing, that you don't see him being very vulnerable most of the time. Usually he's super powerful,
mm-hmm.
and every confrontation he's had up until this point, he is washed the deck with whoever he's had to fight or deal with. He's had no issues, and we finally see this hurts him, foreshadowing to later problems.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess you want to move on to volume 8.
I think it's worth moving on. This one is. World's End is it's not poorly done by any stretch of things, and I'm not sure how you feel about it, I'm sure we'll get into that. But it's the most forgettable book because it just feels a little bit like delaying before the real important story. And I don't think that there's only one section in here that I think is just bad. The rest is actually very strong and worth reading, but it just slows you down before the rest. It's just odd. What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, this is another section where there's been two before this, where it's kind of tales of the universe in the Sandman universe, but not directly concerning any of the characters necessarily.
Right.
You see them pop up here and there, but it's just everyone in this entire universe across time are stranded in this inn the World's End in, and they're telling their stories to pass the time. And this is, of those three kind of sections where it's all just, you know, random stories, this is the best to me. I like this one more than... They basically go get better as you go. The first one is the weakest, I would say, and the second is the second best, and then this is the best. I don't know if that's related to just Neil Gaiman getting better at writing comic books or whatever, or better at writing Sandman comic books. But this is, you know, it's a big frame narrative, basically, where we're being told a story through, another person's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed all the stories in this. Which is the one you think is bad?
I'm interested. Oh, it's the city story.
Yeah. It's, I would say that's the weakest one.
It is. It's very weak to me, and it's told by a character we have no connection to, and it's a stupid story. I don't know. This is Neil Gaiman experimenting and writing little short stories.
Yeah.
And trying to weave the Sandman into them. The thing, I think my biggest complaint with World's End is it just gets to a point where it's like a frame story within a frame story within a frame story. And I think that's too much.
I actually like that. Because that is very difficult to do.
I think just goofy, you know? It doesn't make sense that, you know, we're hearing this guy Brandt tell a story, and then he's telling a story about someone else telling a story, and then within that story people sit around and start telling stories.
I don't necessarily, I respect it because I understand how difficult it is to write that, like to write a story. I mean, just write, just do the first step is, it's like it makes me think of Inception, where each level you go deeper it's harder. And just in, like, craft, you know, writing, how difficult that is to do in any kind of coherent way. I don't really think about it in the way that you're thinking about it, where it's, like, it doesn't make sense that someone would tell a story, and then inside that story someone's telling a story, and then that person is also telling a story from there, you know? Which it doesn't, when you think about it that way, it makes no sense.
It's just one of those devices, like flashbacks and things that I just personally I think should have just been handled a little bit differently, but you know, whatever it is, what it is. And the story that I'm actually specifically talking about is probably my favorite one in the book.
With the
it's the one about the necropolis.
Right, yeah.
Just because I think those people are weird and interesting.
I the ceremonies of death and all that are it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If not disturbing.
It is quite disturbing.
And a little gross.
But I think it's one of the most interesting parts of the book, that these people would have this whole culture about being super morticians.
Yeah. My favorite was actually the Prez story.
The Prez story is a very strong one. I enjoy it a lot. You got that it's like allegorical, you know, the story of Jesus.
Yes,
and yeah, it's also pretty obvious.
And based on a character in DC, two characters
right,
in DC,
really. Which I always forget about that. But two characters.
Prez is a character, but the superhero within Wildcat, he makes it like a small appearance inside the story. He's also an old DC character.
Okay,
but again, he's just kind of a character in the story. I just like, you know, it's kind of, it has that Forrest Gump appeal to it.
Yes.
Where it's, you know, you're revisiting American history, which I'm a big American history buff. I don't want to say a buff, I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough to be a buff, but
you're not a buff, you're a fan.
I'm a fan. But and I love this weird smiley character.
Yeah.
This nefarious kind of creepy figure who's trying to guide history in some way, and that was my favorite. But again, this I like this more than the other two, you know, ones with frame narratives and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, yeah, like I haven't read the last two yet, so I, again, you're when you're saying, you know, they're just kind of preludes to that, kind of slowing you down. It certainly is.
It does insert some interesting foreshadowing, what with showing the endless. I mean, you have a pretty clear idea what's going on, right?
Yeah. I mean, you get to the end that's, you know, where the place is, like, falling down and funeral procession across the sky, mm-hmm. and someone is noticeably absent.
Yes.
Yes, from the procession.
Yes.
So,
it's...
Yeah, you understand what's happening, but you have to read on and figure out. And that was honestly very chilling.
Mm-hmm.
That whole sequence.
There's certainly very effective parts in it, but it's just kind of a frustrating book. Just, I don't know. It's one of the ones that I like to forget about, but I think it could possibly be one of the best ones to read completely out of the context of the rest of the series.
Well, you don't have to have any kind of context. You can mm-hmm. just enjoy these little, they're like Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah. Just little short stories out of context of everything.
But I'll have to read the last two stories, and then I can kind of get total context, you know, in the thoroughfare of the stories. I don't really know why he inserted all these frame stories within the universe, because mm-hmm. you cut them out. I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to read them. Read the series without them, because they do add into the universe.
Yeah, it adds a lot of flavor and a lot of texture that way.
I enjoyed the art in it.
It's as varied and weird as a lot of it is.
Well, I mean, when it's like this, when you're doing multiple stories and that you change the art style with the stories, the style of the story, that doesn't bother me. It's when, you know, it's telling this as one story, you know, through and through, like in Brief Lives, where, you know, it helps to have one artist. In this kind of thing, it doesn't necessarily need it, because you're telling a different story every time.
Yeah.
And you can change the style of the art with the style of the story. But it's still good. I'm not saying I don't... Nothing against it.
It's not Brief Lives.
No, it's definitely
it's apparently the masculine story.
Really?
World's End is, yes.
Okay. I can't even...
Well, they talk at the end about it being boys' fictions.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
The big dick thrusting out in the ocean.
I did enjoy that that little side, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it is boys' fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Although, again, that's...
It's a little bit meta that she points that out, though.
Yes, it is. And there are plenty of women who enjoy boys' fiction, so I don't know what...
Yeah, there are.
When Neil Gaiman, you know, ascribed feminist or whatever, then, you know, makes that delineation, I don't know if he's trying to be on the nose or not.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, you know, when you are, is he just trying to point out the fact that there is no such thing as boys' fiction, or the fact that he's purposely trying to write boys' fiction, but... There is no such thing as boys' fiction, necessarily. It's something we ascribe to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like saying there's no such thing as mystery novels. Yeah, it's a label that's applied to it.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably to sell it to boys, or to people that like mystery novels.
Yeah, I know. Makes me wonder what his goal is of that.
Well, why it was inserted into the story?
Yeah.
I don't know, it says... To me, it was just something about the character was feeling at that moment.
Okay.
She, you know, no, it's odd.
Anything else you want to bring up?
I don't really think so. Okay. I'm excited. I wasn't terribly excited about the books this week, even though I do thoroughly enjoy Brief Lives. I'm really looking forward to reading The Kindly Ones and The Wake.
Yes,
they're
so.
Both very, very excellent books.
So, yeah. Folks, we're finishing up Sandman next week. 9 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Kindly Ones and The Wake, as Eric so accurately described.
I did not call them Game of You.
We're finishing up, and then we can get some kind of a closure on the series, and we can talk about it in its entirety.
Yeah, seems like the thing to do.
Should be pretty good. And we are going to finish this up with a very special segment called Rant and Raven with Alan Moore, in which one of us will write a monologue in the voice of Alan Moore and then read it in our best Alan Moore impersonation. I whip one up. And we'll see how it goes. I'm curious about the reception on this one. You ready, Eric?
I'm so ready.
Okay.
Hello. I'd like to take this opportunity to explain some of my recent comments about the comic book industry. Some people are upset that I, again, when asked, criticize the genre of superhero comics, saying that they are awful and for children. Now, I don't honestly think that all superhero comics are awful and or for children. Just most of them. When one of the two companies that have been steadily reaming me for the past 30 years is the one producing most of these comics, you'll have to forgive me if I don't share my love for them. Now, Alan, what about Marvel? They haven't done anything to you. I would answer that question by saying that's not exactly true. They called me and disturbed a lovely nap to ask me about Miracle Man. About that, and being called the original writer in the credits. I honestly don't remember writing Miracle Man, but I didn't want to involve myself in the other company that's probably full of pit vipers, just like DC. I did not choose that handle, however. If given the chance, I probably would have picked something a little less suspicious. Something like King Writer. Yeah, that's more like it.
That's it.
Bravo, sir. Penned in his own hand.
That's, of all the things I've written, that's probably the closest thing to what he would actually say.
It certainly captures his sentiment, I think.
Yes.
Maybe not his exact words.
No, but...
But, yeah, you took some artistic license there, I think.
Yes, but it's probably more accurate than him describing how he enjoys his oatmeal.
That one is... That still wins me over. It's oatmeal. It's important.
I like my oatmeal a little on the al dente side.
Yeah, man. That's how it's... You know it's yummy.
It is. So, folks, with that, this episode is coming to a close. Don't worry. We'll be back next week with a very special Merry Christmas edition of It's a Boys Comics Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Where we talk about Sandman.
Yeah, and we sing Christmas carols.
Absolutely. It's just
that's... And we're gonna make a gingerbread house.
Gingerbread house is very important. Christmas carols.
Yeah.
Yep, all those things.
My friend John made a gingerbread house with his stepdaughters. They wrote Dead Inside on it.
I saw that. There was someone who did that on Reddit somewhere. I saw it's like a picture of like some little with a little girl like grinning maniacally in the background. Mm-hmm. And it says Dead Inside, and that it's on fire, and there's crumbled gingerbread men in the front. Like,
well, my friend John actually did that. I don't know that he set the thing on fire. I don't think he was those people. But still.
Yeah, it's very good. Anytime you can make Walking Dead references.
Children implicit in a gingerbread house trapped full of zombies.
Warms the heart.
It does.
Warms the cockles.
Is that where your heart is? You have them in your cockles?
No, cockles are inside my heart.
Okay. Cockles.
Yeah.
Didn't understand what you were saying.
Cockles in my heart, no?
No, yes, of course.
Okay. Anyway, folks, we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Every episode posted there first. Every week. You can also find us on iTunes. You can search for Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You'll find us there. Please review us. Please subscribe to us. Do those things, and we will be eternally grateful. Just like Morpheus. And any of the others. Endless. They do everything eternally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's their favorite adverb. Right, Eric?
Naturally.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. We can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can find us on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can find us on the Twitters at HBCHour. You can tweet at us there. You can also tweet at me specifically, at MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. You can also find me on the Tumblrs on the same name. I am also posting stuff on whyilovecomicbooks.com every day, or I'm trying to, at least every day. Eric, where can they find you and your things? On the interwebs.
On the internet now, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You can get my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com, and you can view a collection of most of the things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com, and you can get me on Twitter. My handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
So, folks, we love to hear from you. Please, 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 let us know what you think. Send us suggestions, thoughts, comments, hate mail. Send us those things. We like them all.
I love reading hate mail by the fire.
By the fire.
Firelight.
By the firelight.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Hawkeye giveaway is still going on. Not too late to enter. Go on our Facebook page. Find all the details. This is episode 32. Until next week, have a good one.
Rock and roll.